Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening. Doing. It is the gift of God, not the result of works, so that no one may boast.
I was down for so long. Everybody I did was wrong. I found fault in everyone but me. I was hurt and alone. Could not find my way home. Broken down and hungry. Too tired to moan. Calling my name, saying ain't no need to feel shame. I found out that the door is always open.
Yeah, yes it was, yes it was.
Then I heard somebody call out my name, saying ain't no need to feel shame. I found out that the door was open. Saying ain't no need to feel shame. I found out that the door is always open.
We come from a lot of different religious backgrounds. Those of us in this room, some of us come from no religious background at all. And so I want to begin with a reflection or really just a short tweet from somebody that a lot of you are going to think, why would you even mention this person in worship? Actually, some of you might be upset with me. My colleague might be upset with me for really saying this out loud. There are some things you think like you shouldn't really bring that to church. You shouldn't say that out loud. And then I know that a number of folks in this church also have been burned by churches that make idols out of pastors like this. And that burning runs deep in our bones. And my prayer is that you'll hear in the midst of worship this morning a bit of healing, if that's a place that you've come from. I've really wondered about whether I should share it, but I'm going to do it. As the President of the United States was sworn into office on Martin Luther King Day on Monday, A prominent pastor from the Pacific Northwest, whose name is Mark Driscoll, he tweeted this. I'm praying for our president who today will place his hand on a Bible he does not believe to take an oath to a God he likely does not know. It's disrespectful. Like, that's a starting place. It's audacious. And then I stayed with it, and I thought, it's absurd, and actually, it's idiotic. And a lot of feelings came up inside of me, not to mention the undercurrents of racism that are present in what he's saying. But it's statements like this that have driven so many folks away from following Jesus. And Reverend Emily Heath in the Huffington Post, she responded with more grace than I could muster. And since there are children in the room, I'm going to share her words instead of some of my own. The Christian right has a long history of trying to tell people whether or not they are really Christian. And this is just the latest example. And if they're really serious about their rhetoric of religious freedom, then they need to lead the way. And stop trying to define the faith of others. See, at the core of all of this, at the feelings that welled up inside of me, at the core of all of this is this question, this tension, this fear around questions of salvation and grace and faith. And what do they mean, and who gets to decide? And once they decide, can there really be a place for me to have a voice too? So who gets to say if somebody's saved, if they've experienced grace, if they have faith? Maybe even more importantly, like, how am I to say if I've been saved, or if I have grace, or if I've any faith? And so in the sharpest of contrast to what Mark Driscoll thinks is masculinity, I want to share another version by another masculine theologian and philosopher and writer whose name is Parker Palmer. It's just a different expression of masculinity, one that I find deeply resonating. Palmer writes in the poem, and you'll see it on the screen, and I'd invite you to follow along. It's titled Welcome Home. Alone in the alien, snow-blown woods, moving hard to stay warm in zero weather, I stop on a rise to catch my breath as the setting sun, streaming through bare-boned trees, falls upon my face, fierce and full of life. Breathing easier now, in and out with the earth, I suddenly feel accepted, feel myself stand clear and strong, deep-rooted as the trees, while time and all these troubles disappear. And when, who knows how long, I trudge on down the trail and find my ancient burdens returning, I stop once more to say no to them. Not here, not now, not ever again. Reclaiming the welcome home the woods have given me. The author of the letter we've come to know as Ephesians says it a little bit differently, maybe. You were dead through trespasses and sins in which you once lived, following the course of this world, but by grace you've been saved through faith. And this is not your own doing. See, Driscoll and others like him believe that salvation is dependent on faith, and more specifically, they believe it's dependent on right faith, the faith that they have, and that they're more than happy to tell you should have it, just like they do as well. They have a real clear box of what it looks like. And when I read Ephesians 2, this is what I think they read. I think they read something like this. By grace you've been saved through faith, by absolutely right faith, like I have. And the author could have said that. We could open Ephesians up, and that's what it could say. But it doesn't. It says, by grace you've been saved through faith, and this is not your own doing. Our so-called modern masculine desires, they make us want to find a faith that's all about us, that I can control, that I can claim, that I can dominate. By grace you've been saved through faith, and this is not your own doing. Another person who translates this same verse from Ephesians, his name is Eugene Peterson, and his effort is not to try to take like a word-for-word translation of the text. What he's trying to do is to take this text and allow the poetry that lives in it to resonate in our own lives. And so this is how Peterson translates the same text. Saving is all God's idea, all God's work. All we do is trust God enough to let God do it. It's God's gift from start to finish. We don't play the major role. If we did, we'd probably go around bragging that we'd done the whole thing. No, we neither make nor save ourselves. God does both the making and the saving. That's the heart of what it means to move from DIY to renovation by grace. That's the core of what it means to live a life that's filled with grace and that flows in God's grace. See, grace is first and foremost God's absolute and unrelenting love for us. Period. Full stop, as they say. Period. The setting sun streaming through bare-bone trees falls upon my face, fierce and full of life. God's love, grace, fierce and full of life, shining on us even when we don't recognize it, long before we feel it or know it. The warmth is there. That's the place that we lived last week in worship. The fancy theological word is prevenient grace. But it means God's love is there for you and for all of creation, the folks that you love and the folks that you can hardly even stand to be around. It's just there. It's a front porch on a spring day, like yesterday. You want to just go sit out on that front porch and have the sun beam down. That's where we lived last week. It's a love that can stop you in your tracks. It stopped Palmer in his, and he noticed, he saw himself a little bit differently. The front porch is the place where God meets us and we get to know God, but God's love always lures us deeper, further, into a greater hope and greater possibility. And in Wesley's language, he used an image of a house, and he showed us that God's love is for us like this porch, and then that love lures us through the door. The door is always open, as Kebmo says. God's grace unlocks that door and we move through. And a lot of people want to say that's the either or. I think that's where Driscoll's stuck. He thinks that, no, yes, he wants to decide. But God's love is calling us into that house to figure out how do we live this out in our own lives. And we're going to spend our entire worship next week just around that question of what does it look like? Once we say yes back to God and we want to be channeled by God's grace, how do we move? How do we live and have our being? It happened for the founder of the Methodist movement, John Wesley. And I think this is an example of, if it can happen like this, there's hope for me, there's hope for me, there's hope for me. He was sitting in I imagine it as a sanctuary, and someone, I'm told, was reading from the preface, Luther's preface, to Romans. Have you read Luther's preface to the Romans? This is not the place where you think, oh, God has got me now. Like, yeah, amazing grace, how sweet the sound. I was in seminary, and this is the part where a lot of people kind of like, can we move on? Isn't liberation theology soon? Come on. This is the moment that John Wesley somehow, because God works in strange ways that we can't control, that we can't define and we can't confine. And God came to Wesley at this moment. And somehow, this preacher's kid, who felt like no matter how hard he tried, he kept stumbling along. And people would come to him and say, I want to follow Jesus. Can you help me find a way? And honestly, I think he was like, I don't know what I can do. And in that moment, he felt accepted, loved. He felt forgiveness. The door opened for him. He says his heart was strangely warmed. And I want us to stay in that moment. Some of you maybe have had those moments. Maybe it was when you were sitting in a classroom or a lecture hall and someone was reading a preface to something. Or maybe it was like Palmer, you're walking out. Maybe it was while you were traveling. It's the least expected of places where God shifts our lives and calls us into a new relationship. I want to use an image this morning as we hold from DIY to renovation by grace that I think is brilliant. It's a really short clip from a television show called Yard Crashers. And what we're going to see is a young man whose name is Ramon. And Ramon is hanging out. He's actually coming out with his little shopping cart of a hardware store. And Ahmed Hassan, who I'm told is from this area, from around here, he meets him. And he's like, I want to go home and do some renovation on your yard. And I want us to watch what happens, and I want to invite you to think about this person who's there, who's coming out, just going about his day, having an encounter with the God that wants to renovate his life, change his life, make it new. So let's watch.
Did you come here looking for me today?
No, but I find you here.
What's your name?
My name is Ramon.
Ramon, my name is Ahmed. I'm a landscaper.
Nice to meet you.
What about yourself? You a soccer player?
Yeah. No, I'm just supporting the team.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a truck driver.
You're a truck driver?
Yeah.
But on the weekends, it looks like you're a landscaper.
On the weekends, I gotta get all my... I like to work on my garden.
Okay. I like to work in your garden, too. Can I go home with you and do some work today?
Yeah, let's go do it.
Let's go.
I didn't have like that. If you don't charge us, you know I don't need to know anything.
Okay, as long as I don't charge, you don't need to know anything?
That's it.
All right, let's go.
Let's go.
Let's not get hit. As soon as that truck goes, let's go.
We can go.
Right, so what are we doing, man?
And you can give me some ideas, man.
I can give you some ideas.
Yeah, that'll work.
Now, here's the deal. Check it out. Let me tell you what I do. I do landscaping projects with people. I'll tell you what. You lead the way. I'll push the basket.
All right.
You lead the way. I'll push the basket. Where are we going?
It's going to be this way.
This way. All right. Let's go this way. So what I do is I'm a landscaper. I come out to people's yards, and I do landscaping projects with them, all in an effort to shoot it on TV so that we can show the world how you go about doing these projects. Maybe the thought process, the design process. And the homeowner, like people like yourself, would have to help do part of this project. Hopefully I can teach you something. Maybe you can teach me something. We can get the project done.
Yeah.
You cool?
Yeah, that'll work.
All right?
That'll work.
Well, you ready to go home and do this? Because I'm ready.
Ahmed says, did you come here looking for me today? No, but I found you. Like, how many times do we wake up in the morning and go, I'm going to go looking for God today? I don't do that very often. And yet, at moments, I get thrown off, and God finds me there and asks me some questions. That's what it's like on the front porch. It's like we're just going about our business. No big expectations. We think we have a plan. We think we're going to do it ourselves. And God's there asking us, were you looking for me? No, I wasn't. And really, most often, I'm more like the guy we watched a couple weeks ago, the guy in the green truck. If you remember this guy, for those of you that are here, the guy in the green truck, Ahmed came up to him, and the guy was like, you're not coming home with me. You can't work in lawns. You wear white pants. Nobody works in lawns that wears white. These aren't white, and Ahmed argues with them. No, they're khaki. They argue about whether it's khaki or not. That's more like my relationship with God most of the time. Are you in khaki? I don't know. That's where I tend to live, and there's this meeting, and there's this encounter, and God says, can I come home and renovate your life? See, God initiates it. God begins that moment, lures and invites and calls and wants to renovate our lives. Mostly, we just kind of drive off in the green truck. I love Ramon. He says, as long as you don't charge, like, what's the catch? See, we've heard too much in the church about all the catches. And the catch, as Ahmed goes on to say, is that, well, I'm going to share with you some ideas. And you push the cart, I'll push the cart, and you show me the way. It's this like mutual relationship of going back and forth, of taking a few steps ourselves and listening for how God is luring us to take the next step or calling us to be different and to be transformed and to renovate our lives. He end with, we'll get the project done. And Ahmed says, I'm ready. Are you ready? I want to watch it one more time because I really want you to go home with this image of how your life might be renovated. So some people think this is crazy. I want to see this one more time because I really think this is important for us, this door. Can you show it one more time?
Did you come here looking for me today?
No, but I find you here.
What's your name?
My name is Ramon.
Ramon, my name is Ahmed. I'm a landscaper.
Nice meeting you.
What about yourself? You a soccer player?
No, I'm just supporting the team.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a truck driver.
You're a truck driver?
Yeah.
But on the weekends, it looks like you're a landscaper.
On the weekends, I gotta get all my. I like to work on my garden.
Okay. I like to work in your garden too. Can I go home with you and do some work today?
Yeah, let's go do it.
Let's go.
I didn't have like that. If you don't charge us, you know I don't need to know anything.
Okay, as long as I don't charge, you don't need to know anything.
That's it.
All right, let's go.
Let's go.
Let's not get hit. As soon as that truck goes, let's go.
We can go.
Right, so what are we doing, man?
And you can give me some ideas, maybe.
I can give you some ideas.
Yeah, that'll work.
Now, here's the deal. Check it out. Let me tell you what I do. I do landscaping projects with you. I'll tell you what. You lead the way. I'll push the basket.
All right.
You lead the way. I'll push the basket. Where are we going?
It's going to be this way.
This way. All right. Let's go this way. So what I do is I'm a landscaper. I come out to people's yards, and I do landscaping projects with them, all in an effort to shoot it on TV so that we can show the world how you go about doing these projects, maybe the thought process, the design process. And the homeowner, like people like yourself, would have to help do part of this project. Hopefully I can teach you something. Maybe you can teach me something. We can get the project done.
Yeah.
You cool?
Yeah, that'll work.
All right?
That'll work.
So you ready to go home and do this? Because I'm ready.
What keeps you most of the time from saying yes? What keeps you from walking through the door? And I've been in conversations with many of you that I know struggle with this. So many folks that say, you know, I'm really on the front porch. I'm not quite ready to say yes. And there's so many different reasons that we might hold that would make us say, I'm going to wait right here. I'm not going to go along with where you're taking me. I'm going to stay right here on the front porch. I'm not going to leave this store, as you saw in that image. For some of us, I think it's because we think we've got it ourselves. I got it. I don't need God. That would be dependent and I'm strong. I don't need that. I think for some of us, we feel like all this language, it's too much. It's too religious. It's too Jesus-y. Too Jesus-y. I do it, but the Jesus-y thing, I don't know. I think a lot of us, though, really, we allow voices like Mark Driscoll's to echo so loud in our hearts and our heads that we think, I'm not going there. And we think, there's no space for me in that kind of a faith tradition. There just can't be. And so we allow those voices to win out and to keep us away, to hold us back, to make us fall down on the porch, rather than walk with God and others through that front door. And so I want to offer a counter to that voice and invite you to just hold this to that narrow, violent voice. This is Mother Teresa's words, and I'm going to start with her in 1959 in September, writing in her own journal. If I ever become a saint, I will surely be one of darkness. I will continually be absent from heaven to light the light to those in darkness on earth. And 2 years earlier, as she wrote a letter, sorry, 2 months earlier, she wrote this letter to a colleague and advisor. There is so much contradiction in my soul, such deep longing for God, so deep that it's painful, a suffering continual and yet not wanted by God, repulsed, empty, no faith, no love, no zeal. Souls could not hold attraction. Heaven means nothing to me. It looks like an empty place. The thought of it means nothing to me, and yet the torturing longing for God, pray for me, please, that I keep smiling at him in spite of everything. For I am only his, so he has every right over me, and I'm perfectly happy to be nobody, even to God. Faith is big enough to include that kind of grappling. Faith doesn't have to be reduced down to a simple scenario and an equation that some white dude in jeans in Seattle thinks he knows that nobody else can have quite right. Faith can have the depth and the beauty and the mystery, the hurt and the hope that a Mother Teresa experienced and felt. I'd say it requires it. A teacher once told me that the legitimate confusion is better than premature certainty. And my own faith journey often dwells just right there. So what is it going to require to not back away from that, but to hold that as faith, as hope, as trusting in God and feeling lured through that door? You know, maybe a lot of you, though, have never sat in a pew and had someone read the preface to Romans and felt your heart strangely warmed. Maybe you've never been out on that hike and felt the sun come down on you and thought, God's love is even for me. Even for me. And I want to say that you're not alone. You're not alone in feeling like I haven't had that big moment that defines everything. Because for many of the people seated around you and many of the saints who've gone before us and those who'll come way after us, God's conversion, God's lure in the door, it comes in small ways. As the contractors would say, like, the visual progress isn't always obvious. But can we look long enough? Can we hold with enough hope that renovation might be there? And then name some of those small moments as significant. And I want to offer this prayer, this poem for you as we move toward the table that lures us all to God's love. For those of us that haven't maybe experienced that kind of faith, or we say, you know what, that language is too religious for me. Here's a poem by David White. I want to write about faith, about the way the moon rises over cold snow night after night. Faithful even as it fades from fullness, slowly becoming the last curving and impossible sliver of light before the final darkness. But I have no faith myself. I refuse it even the smallest entry. Let this then, my small poem, like a new moon, slender and barely open, be the first prayer that opens me to faith. That the door is always open. May we too be open this day to faith. What is your prayer as you're lured through that door? What renovation is needed in your life this day? Perhaps your prayer life has become so predictable and you just need to let go. You need some change. Perhaps communion has become routine. Maybe scripture has collected a lot of dust on the shelf next to you and needs to be dusted off. Maybe you're afraid to share with others your own faith, your own experience of God's renovation, your own questions and grappling. Maybe worship for you has become this sporadic thing that maybe you do or maybe you don't. It's tempting to find fault, Kebmo says, in everybody. So as we move toward the table, our invitation is to hold the question that Jesus invites us into. What in your life is needing renovation? What needs to be knocked down and rebuilt? How might God be in the midst of that? See, the table offers us the breadth and the depth of God's full story. It's ours to grapple with, to hold on to. It's that grace, not anything that we've done, that makes us new. It's your faith, your longing, that will guide us into God's new life, into God's hope for renovation in our lives.
If I let you down, 'cause all I know is how to run, 'cause I am a sinner. If it's not one thing, it's another. Caught up in words, tangled in lies. But you are a savior, and you take brokenness aside and make it beautiful, beautiful. But you are a savior, and you take brokenness aside and make it beautiful.